Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. Later this hour, we will talk to Quentin Fotrell, who was a friend of mine. We used to be on the business lunch with me from time to time. He writes a column called The Moneyist for MarketWatch.com, and it's really Dear Abby for money fights. It's kids fighting over their inheritance, things like that. Quentin puts a very human touch on all of that. We'll talk to him a little bit later. But right now we say hello to Kate Filippo. She is a PhD and associate professor at Loyola University. Professor, welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I talked last week to my cousin in Ireland, and they're going on lockdown, but they're keeping their schools open. And then I saw a story today in the Guardian or somewhere, you know, and they sort of put together a piece, you were quoted in it, saying that there are a number of studies showing that there's no increased risk to students or teachers in open schools. I know you've talked about emotionally and mentally, kids are suffering in all sorts of ways. Tell me about that.
Sure. I mean, first, to be really clear, I do feel individually and as a person who's a big fan of public health science that there is a risk present for young people and educators who are present in schools. And more specifically, that there's a lot of information we still don't know yet.
So you're not. Just from the outset, you're not saying that we should go back to in-school learning.
I don't think we have enough evidence yet that says that that is what we need to be doing.
And you were social.
That is the best thing to do.
You were a social worker at CPS, so you're very familiar with the environment.
Yes, I was a social worker actually in Palatine, and then I worked for an organization that partnered with a lot of different CPS schools.
Okay, so back to the mental health then.
Sure. So the survey that we did was a national survey. We talked with, or we heard from over 2,100 teachers in 46 states in the U.S. just to ask them what it has been like to support student well-being since the pandemic began. So we asked them what they were seeing. And just about half of those teachers said that they've seen a higher level of psychological distress, different wellness concerns, things like food and housing insecurity, fear of illness or death, actually dealing with illness and death in their families since the pandemic began.
And
so there's been a higher rate of mental health concerns and well-being concerns overall.
Do you think it's higher among children than it is among adults? Because I would imagine that adults are certainly going through a lot of that too.
I would imagine so. We asked teachers about their own well-being, but we didn't gather information about how adults are doing. Mm-hmm. Just what were teachers seeing among the students that they worked with?
And were the teachers then, did the teachers have the resources to help?
Some of them do, and said that their school leaders and their school psychologists, counselors, nurses, and social workers were doing a great job. Many of them said they were handling situations themselves because there was not help available to them. Mm. So teachers who are also dealing with the pandemic, who are also dealing with grief and loss, who are also rattled by all the upheavals we've had in our country in terms of racial justice, they were the ones responding to student wellness issues. One teacher who I know socially posted on Facebook that she was trying to raise money for a student's family in Chicago who needed money to make their rent.
Mm. I'm going to sound now like I'm arguing for a return to in-school learning, and I'm not, but this article, it was in the Daily Mail out of the UK. It cites a Yale study. It said found there were no differences in the proportion of those who contracted the disease and who looked after children, and those who did not. So the same results. A Spanish study conducted at the start of the second wave found that there was also no increase in infections among school children or teachers at reopening. So I bring that up only to say maybe we should be looking into this a little more closely, because maybe these kids would be better off mentally if they were back in school.
Definitely need to be looking into it more closely. You know, one of my own son's teachers quit on the first day of school because he did not feel safe going into the building. My son resides in a district where they did opt to do face-to-face school. He lives out of state. And I'd say we definitely need to be gathering more information. Right now, there are a lot of states who have face-to-face schooling, so we have the opportunity to learn more about what's happening to teachers. But we have evidence of some teachers becoming ill and even dying, and it's still not entirely clear what the course of infection was for them. So the question that you're asking, Steve, is would it be better for kids' well-being to send them back to school? School is really great at a lot of things, but I think we need to remember that a lot of the mental health issues that students are having are not because they're in remote learning, but because we're in the middle of interlocking crises in our country.
That's great.
So going back to school isn't going to help kids whose parents have died. I mean, it might help them learn things, but it's not going to take that away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think that's an excellent point, and one that I didn't grasp until you made it. But alternatively, you could say that if the kids are in school, they're going to be closer to help and to social workers such as yourself or others who might be able to reach out if they see them in crisis.
Sure. I mean, knowing that it's easier, and many of the teachers who wrote in narrative responses to our survey said things like, do you understand how hard it is to understand if a kid is okay or not when I'm teaching them on Zoom with 28 other kids? It is very difficult for teachers to assess how kids are doing when they're only seeing them on a screen. Some of the recommendations that we made, based on my colleagues and my knowledge of school mental health delivery in school settings, as well as the way in which teachers are able to work to promote student wellness from their unique position, is that it's not enough to wait for a referral from a teacher, that it's best at this point for school wellness professionals like nurses, like social workers, to deliberately connect with families, to deliberately connect with teachers and grade level teams to get a sense of what is happening. There are wonderful examples across the country of schools bringing in small numbers of kids who really need to be in a physical building, whether it's because they have special needs or because they simply don't have a safe or quiet workspace at home. And then that's a chance to connect with kids in a setting that's not necessarily having 4,000 people going through a building.
I think that's that's Chicago's plan, right, to bring in special needs students first?
That is one of the possibilities that's on the table. Knowing Chicago and knowing the players at hand, I think we don't yet know what's actually going to happen, but that's one of the things that's been discussed, and that's definitely happening in other districts in the country.
You're referring to the teachers' union?
I'd say everybody involved, the mayor, CPS, and the teachers' union, that these are all very strong actors that have strong ideas and strong support. So what that coalition of folks comes up with, I don't think that it's going to end up looking exactly like the first policies that have been floated.
I had a doctor on a few weeks ago. Actually, he was on John Williams when I was doing the news on John's show. And I asked him about the safety of teachers. And I won't give his name because I'm like 98% confident in my quote, Kate, so I don't want to put it on him wholly. But
sure.
He said that, you know, we've shown now that with correct PPE, healthcare workers are safe, that they are not at an enhanced risk. And so his argument was that teachers would not be at enhanced risk either if they had the proper PPE. What do you make of that?
Proper PPE, I think most teachers would be very enthusiastic about. What I'm seeing, both from the colleagues and friends of mine who are educators, but also the educators across the country who I follow on social media, is that is not exactly what is happening, that people get a certain amount of PPE, but it's not enough. It doesn't account for kids losing PPE, losing it or leaving it behind, taking it off and stepping in it. You know, the things that just normal, healthy kids are going to do because that's what kids do. So I think PPE would go a long way. The other questions that have to come into play are things, and, you know, this is pretty obvious, so I'm not saying something that you probably haven't already thought about.
Don't be surprised, yeah.
If everyone's in a classroom 6 feet apart, which is a big if, right, given what the size of some of our classes are, and there's PPE, that's great, right? What if there's not space to have people 6 feet apart? And then what happens at lunchtime? How do you eat with a mask on?
Yeah,
how do you do that in the winter? You know, maybe you can go outside for lunch if the weather's nice, but, you know, Chicago's not a place where that's guaranteed.
I know a superintendent in a relatively affluent school district in the western suburbs, and I asked him about that early, and this is early on. I don't even know where they are in this situation now. But I said, so the students would stay in one class and only move for lunch? And he said, no, they wouldn't move for lunch either, because they actually can socially distance more easily in their classroom than they can in the cafeteria. But again, that's an affluent suburb in a district where they probably have much nicer facilities than others.
That's been raised both in CPS and also in the New York City Department of Ed, Steve, is the quality of ventilation in buildings. And I'm not a ventilation scientist, but that's something that's worth thinking about. If there needs to be a circulation of air, do schools meet that standard? And can they meet that standard when it's too cold to have windows open?
Well, Kate, then what's the fix?
My opinion is honest, not fantasy assessment of whether adequate PPE is available for all students and all educators. And that's everybody. That's custodial staff. That's people who work in the office. Is there adequate spacing, PPE, ventilation for all those folks? If the answer is no, then I don't think it's time to end remote learning. And that's where I think it's time to consider what are other viable alternatives. There are great examples all around the Chicago area of hybrid learning that's happening. And there are great examples all around the country. Like, let's look at those, let's see what's working and see what can be adapted. And if it's too expensive, if it's too complicated, then I think it's time to ask, why are we doing this now?
But in the meantime, then, these kids who are suffering from, I mean, I guess we could go back up a couple of miles and say, is it the teacher's responsibility to assess the mental well-being of these students? I mean, I understand if they notice something, but are they, by job, a safety net?
By job, teachers are a safety net in American society. We have historically asked schools to do things that we as a society are not ready to do or to pay for. So we've done that for a long time. My approach has always been, you know, having a good teacher with good mental health skills to be able to recognize and respond to mental health or physical health issues should not be solely a teacher's job. There are things that teachers see that other educators don't see in the same way, just because of the daily contact. And think again of, like, many of our neighborhood schools in Chicago, it's not just one child that knows that teacher. It's often generations of a family that are connected to a school. You know, a range of siblings, cousins, sometimes parents and children have had the same teacher. Like, that's a really rich knowledge that me coming in as a social worker, I just couldn't have that in the same way.
So
teachers have a lot of knowledge. Let's use that and support them and have the supports in school that teachers need to be able to do their job, which is to teach really well without overtaxing them.
Kate Philippo is an associate professor at Loyola University. I appreciate your time today, Kate. You gave us a lot to think about. Thank you, Professor.
I really appreciate it. I wish you well.
All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to
Take care. Bye.
You bet.